Please enjoy 30 Seconds of Nature, brought to you by Ducks Unlimited Canada. Learn how you can experience nature in your community at ducks.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're going to learn some new stuff about the past behavior of a new federal minister.
This is going to be bad, right? Don't do it. I'm telling you, I'm warning you. She just went ahead and said, I don't want to hear it.
Wait for that. Listen, we tried our best this past federal election. We tried our best to vet as many candidates as we could. Canada Land's Sam Connaught followed up on tips. He dove into social media histories. He tracked down sources. He did a great job of finding things out about candidates that were not yet known. Now, what kind of stuff was he looking for? Was he muckraking? Was Canada Land looking for dirt? Yes, absolutely. But also, not specifically, our job, I think the whole media's job during an election is broader than that. We were looking for anything that you should know. You know, these people were asking voters to elect them. They wanted us to hire them to do a job for us. So our standard was not, is this a scandal? Is this a cancelable offense? Is this disqualifying? It's not really for us to decide that, you know? The call that we made each time was about whether or not the public had a right to know about it. If it's something that we would want to know, if we were thinking about voting for the person. And so we left it for you to decide how big a deal it was in each case. And like I said, Sam did great. And so did reporters at other news organizations. In certain cases, candidates were fired or they chose to withdraw from the race. And in other cases, they stuck around. And voters just had a bit more information about them to make their decisions, which is good, which is how it should be. But listen, there were a lot of candidates. 343 seats in Parliament up for grabs. A lot of the people who wanted them were new candidates. And it was a very short election. So inevitably, some candidates slipped through the cracks. One candidate in particular, we did not vet. And that candidate won. And then she was named to cabinet. She is now a federal minister. And only then, after she was named to cabinet, did we get a tip about her. A tip that led our reporter, Julian Abraham, to do some investigating. He reported this out, and his reporting did, in fact, turn up some information about her that was not yet known, but which should be known. Well, better late than never. Wait for it. Julian Abraham, hello.
Hello, Jesse Brown, hello.
All right, let's begin with a tip. How did this story come across your desk?
So I got a tip from a listener, and it basically said, hey, I worked with this new cabinet minister at a previous job, and she was terrible to me. And it made it all the way to the lawyers, and I was not the only one who thought her behavior was a problem, and I've got the documents to prove it.
That sounds like a good tip.
Yep. So the tipster said that before Election Day, they alerted the Liberal Party and never got a response.
All right. Well, it sounds like the tipster did get a response from you. You did not choose to ignore her.
No, and it turned out to be interesting.
I think that it's time that we tell everybody which federal minister we're talking about.
I'm talking about the new Minister of Northern and Arctic Affairs, Rebecca Chartrand.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Chartrand, and I'm here in Churchill, Manitoba. Polar bears, beluga whales, and hundreds of other species call this place home. I'm committed to protecting the environmental integrity of the entire Churchill Riding.
Newly elected Manitoba MP Rebecca Chartrand has been named Minister of Northern and Arctic Affairs.
For the last 17 years, Manitoba's northernmost riding has been an NDP stronghold, but that did change last night. So Churchill Kiewit-Nikaski is now represented by Liberal Rebecca Chartrand. She says this win is particularly sweet.
I think people wanted a change. I think they, you know, especially because there's almost nearly 80% Indigenous people in this riding, I think our people are more engaged and they're understanding what a vote means, and especially now the stakes have been too high.
So a quick biography of Rebecca Chartrand. She's got a master's degree in educational leadership from the University of Manitoba, finished in 2016. Sits on a bunch of boards, Canadian Museum of Nature, Children's Hospital, Foundation of Manitoba. Done lots of work in higher education, K-12, usually on the leadership side. And she's CEO of a company called Indigenous Strategy, which I believe is a consulting firm. So she's definitely got accolades in the nonprofit, education, and business worlds. When it comes to politics, she's sort of a rookie. She's a brand new MP, just won her riding of Churchill Kiewit-Nikaski this year. And she's already Minister of Northern and Arctic Affairs, as well as the minister responsible for the Canadian Northern Economic Development Agency. And since it'll come up in the story, we should mention Chartrand is herself Indigenous.
Those are two big files right now for any member of Parliament. I mean, Arctic issues are top of mind. You've got economic development in terms of natural resources in the North. Arctic sovereignty, you've got Trump's Golden Dome. I have to imagine that there's an Arctic component to that whole defense strategy that just was announced. This all overlaps with international relations because you got other countries making claims on the Arctic. And then you got Indigenous issues wrapped up into anything to do with the North and the Arctic.
She's a very important minister. But before this moment in her career, she worked in education. And I'm going to tell you what happened back then. So the story starts in 2019, before COVID, and we're in Winnipeg at a school called Red River College.
Red River College Polytechnic, Manitoba's largest institution of applied learning, located in the heart of Canada, is the key.
It's kind of a big school. They have 21,000 students annually, which is in the same ballpark as places like Dalhousie, Carleton, etc. Big community college. They have programs for construction trades, English as a second language, multimedia program.
And this is where your source worked.
Yes. So in 2019, Rebecca Chartrand, she worked at this college. She was the executive director of Indigenous Strategy.
Okay.
And from what I understand, she was generally very good at her job. Even people I spoke with who had complaints about her, they all said she was brilliant. She's talked about as a sharp thinker and like a really charismatic person.
Okay. What was her job? Like, you told us the title, but what was she responsible for?
She was in charge of strategy for Indigenous students. So when the school decided they wanted to set aside $1 million in financial aid for Indigenous students specifically, Rebecca was the one leading the charge.
So that was administered by her department?
Yeah. And now, I don't know if you've ever given out $1 million before, but from what I understand, you can't just do it randomly. Like, there needs to be some sort of method to divide it up and figure out how much you give to each student. And not every student can have some, so you need to evaluate individual need.
Right. So these were not, like, merit-based scholarships. These were need-based financial aid. It's different than a scholarship. It's, we've got $1 million, and we want the people who need it most to get it.
From what I understand, yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So Rebecca's department put together a survey for prospective Indigenous students, and they would fill it out, answer a bunch of multiple-choice questions. And from this, Chartrand and her team could figure out who needed the most support.
Huh. Okay. So not based on, like, financial disclosure, but on, like, self-assessment. Like, you fill out a multiple-choice thing that will tell them that this is how needy I am or how disadvantaged I am?
Yes, but now the survey doesn't really explain that. It just sort of asks you to fill it out, but yes, that was the idea.
Right. It wasn't explicit what this is for. And
no.
This is, I'm assuming something went wrong.
It went very wrong, and it actually ended up on the news.
I would say, like, really kind of like stereotyping.
It's a 43-question survey used to determine if prospective Indigenous students are ready for school.
So this is a story from global reporter Amber McGookin. It aired on March 22nd, 2019.
But the questions include asking how much alcohol, marijuana, and drugs a student is taking, as well as how a student would handle a violent relationship and an emotional crisis.
people took issue with some of the questions. And I think we should get a sense of what they were actually asking here. So, Jesse, I've got the survey in front of me. Do you want to read question number 21?
Question 21. What statement best describes your alcohol consumption per week over the past 3 months? A, I drink less than 15 drinks per week. B, I drink more than 15 drinks per week. C, I drink more than 4 drinks at one time more than twice a week. And there is D, I don't drink alcohol.
And then there's a very similar one about prescription drugs, another about cannabis. It's very similar phrasing, the kind of thing you might get at like a doctor's office, I guess. So here's prospective student Charlene Harper, who Global News interviewed back in 2019.
Kind of like in the sense of like assuming that Indigenous people, all of them like do drugs, you know what I mean? And alcohol. The fact that like they're assuming that, I think that like that's offensive.
So yeah, I guess we're starting to get a sense of what people thought of it here on campus. Jesse, do you want to read number 16?
All right, question 16. It reads, you have been triggered emotionally by a crisis. How do you respond? And the first option here, A, is you go out and party so you don't feel your problems.
It's a little unusual. And there's this one question that I thought was especially unusual, kind of elaborate, and kind of sad. And this is question 14. Jesse, you want to read this one?
Question 14. You are hit by a car and taken to the hospital. You have minimal injuries and are released. When the doctor asks who they should phone to pick you up, what will be the most likely scenario? And here are your choices here. A, the doctor will call friends or family. They will be worried and come as soon as possible. B, the doctor will attempt to phone several numbers that you provide, but there will be no answer. C, the doctor will be able to contact someone and they agree to come, but never show up. Finally, D, you have nobody to call.
Kind of bleak, eh?
Yeah, it's a strange little novel that's written in that one question. And I don't know. I could certainly see why people took offense. I'm actually not sure what's more insulting. You know, there are sort of stereotypes that are inferred about Indigenous people's lives in those questions. But there's also in this survey, like if you're actually trying to find out through the survey who's more disadvantaged, you're assuming that the students wouldn't just see through this and realize like, oh, this is a self-assessment of how pitiful I am. And if you just fill it out in a way that describes you as the most needy and pitiful without being a drug addict, you'll get the most, you know, the maximum amount of student aid. So it seems very gameable to me.
Totally, totally.
So what happened with this? What was the fallout?
The survey went out to about 100 people. Then they slammed on the brakes because there was basically immediate backlash, which involved the press catching wind of this and getting leaked a full copy of the survey. And Rebecca Chartrand, being the executive director of Indigenous Strategy at the college, she was in charge of issuing a public response.
You know, we're deeply sorry if anybody, took offense to them. That wasn't the intention of it.
Was that her entire response?
No, she issued a statement, too. And basically the statement said this version of the survey that the media got a hold of, it was an early pilot version. And she said that it's been revised due to the backlash. And she also said all info collected has been destroyed. So they did walk it back.
Okay, so thank you, Julian, for bringing us up to speed on, I guess, all of this information, which was already known about her. I am guessing this is not where the story ends.
No, it's where the old story on Chartrand ended and where our story about her begins.
Then it made the media probably the next day, and then hit the fan.
Well, that sounds like the right place to put an ad break. Okay, we'll be back in a moment. Stick around.
Okay, I'm going to introduce you to someone, Jesse, and we're going to call her Laura.
Is that her real name?
No, it's not. So we agreed with her that if she were to go on the record speaking negatively about a former employer, it could negatively impact her career prospects.
Yeah, it probably would. Okay, that makes sense.
So I'll start with how she met Rebecca Chartrand. 10 years ago, they first met when Laura was volunteering for the Liberal Party on Rebecca Chartrand's earlier campaign.
I guess I'll start in the beginning. 2015, I started working with Rebecca Chartrand. That's how I met her, on the 2015 Liberal campaign where she was going for the Churchill riding.
And she ended up losing that one. And Laura volunteered on that campaign, sticking up lawn signs, knocking on doors, that kind of stuff. And she says it was during this campaign when they first clicked.
So yes, I would say we were friends, friendly, like very collegial friends, had grown to be in that place, trusting,
Then in 2017, Rebecca started working at Red River College. And shortly after that, Laura started working there as well. And this was in a role where Rebecca was now her boss.
Mm-hmm.
So Laura says for the most part, this was going really well. And they would even spend time together outside of work.
I'm not that social of a person, but I would go out with her group of friends kind of once in a while. She'd invite me over or we'd have staff meetings, like the inner three or four people at her house.
So everything was going well, but then the survey.
The survey and an embarrassing story about it on local global news.
Yeah, so internally, a bunch of people were involved in the survey. It's not like it was just Rebecca, but my sources tell me Rebecca, in her capacity as executive director, was more or less leading the charge. Now, before the survey ever went out, Laura says she knew it was going to be trouble.
I kept saying, this is too early. And I was still friends with her. I was doing it to say, I got your back. Like, we can't do this. This is going to be bad, right? Don't do it. I'm telling you, I'm warning you, right? She just went ahead and said, I don't want to hear it.
So obviously it went out anyhow.
And then it made the media, like probably the next day. And then hit the fan.
And according to Laura, this was when things went sideways between her and Rebecca.
You know, I'm not terribly surprised by that. Like, you know, nobody likes I told you so.
Yeah.
You don't have to actually say I told you so. If you did warn somebody and tell them so, this is just my experience as a manager. Like, if someone warned you not to do something and you did it anyhow and it blows up in your face, rather than being like, wow, I really should have listened to you. Thanks so much. I'll respect your input more in the future. The person can become like a walking I told you so. Like, just like
just seeing them.
Just seeing them reminds you, like, it's a really hard thing for a relationship after you ignored somebody's really good advice and it blew up in your face. I'm not terribly surprised that that drove a wedge or that became a point of division between these two women.
So according to Laura and a few other sources in the college I spoke to, this department was a mess after the survey incident.
How so?
My sources say people were accusing each other of leaking the survey to the news. There was an internal investigation into how the whole thing happened. In a general atmosphere of anxiety and suspicion. And Laura says Rebecca Chartron was upset with her for the concerns she raised over it and the evidence she turned over in the internal investigation that might not have been the most flattering to the department.
This sounds nasty, but it sounds like normal nasty, like normal nasty toxic workplace stuff.
Have you worked in places like this?
I mean, I've covered a lot of like toxic workplace stuff in the media. And a lot of this is ringing bells for me that it's not even so much what happened, but who snitched about what happened and who's to blame for what happened and who was on which side and who's talking to who.
I'm going to take you through the allegations now because this is when they start. So this document here is from September of 2019. And Jesse, do you want to read the top here?
Titled Confidential Complaint Summary.
So Laura alleges that Rebecca Chartron basically, like, turned against her in all these little ways that really added up in a big way. So, for example, one of the allegations is that Laura was given this, like, surprise workload when they were on a work trip. So everyone was getting ready to go to a social activity after the conference, and all of a sudden, Laura gets this 50-page presentation that's due in 2 days, and the report was never used. There's also an allegation that Rebecca called in Laura to a meeting where she was presenting something in front of some academic folks. And what she was presenting was a new hypothetical organizational chart. And that chart would have changed the scope of Laura's job from managing 25 people to managing 3 people. Similarly, she alleges that Chartron went and undermined her, went to people that reported to Laura and basically said, you don't have to listen to her. You don't have to respect your boss's authority. Another one, Laura alleges that Chartron did things that would make it hard for her to get out of there and move to a different company through a connection, because allegedly Laura was sitting on a City of Winnipeg board like for years and years and years, and she has to fill out a conflict of interest form every year with the college. It's never been a problem. It's just sort of a mandatory thing you have to do. But after the survey, this request got denied for the first time, and it was for no good reason as far as Laura could tell.
Yeah, I get the picture. When you talk about bullying and harassment allegations, I think a lot of people think about, you know, a boss screaming at you and maybe throwing a stapler at your head. This is not that.
And these allegations, if they are all true, can make life pretty bad. And Laura says it had a lasting effect on her.
I would say that the severity of this, you know, has changed the trajectory of my life to date. I got a really great job after that, but I had like workplace PTSD and it was noticeable. And I had a really great subsequent boss who noticed that I felt like an abused dog in a corner every time I was asked to do something. I was a perfectionist and I had to like get it all in writing. And it took a while for her to convince me that everything was fine. You don't need to do this three times. I think all of that stems back to this harassment.
Okay, Julian, we have heard the complaints and yeah, they sound pretty bad, but as you've made very clear, these were allegations.
Mm-hmm.
What happened with them? Were they proven?
Actually, yes, they were. Not in court or anything, but as is pretty typical in workplace grievance situations, when someone makes complaints, management looks into them. Red River did so twice. First, they did an internal investigation. Then, after more complaints, they hired an external investigator who was hired to look into all of these claims and see if they hold up or not. And I have the resulting document here. So Laura gets this letter from Red River College announcing the results of an independent investigation done by a law firm called Rachelis Neville LLP. It says that not only the college, but also the law firm investigated what was allegedly going on here between Rebecca and Laura, and both determined that these things did happen. And it's all the same allegations we went through earlier.
So all of that stuff that you qualified as allegedly this and allegedly that, as far as this law firm's investigation was concerned, these allegations were true.
And this letter actually goes on to quote the law firm saying they found, actually, do you want to read this here, Jesse?
Yeah, sure. So Red River College tells Laura, investigators concluded that the complaint was substantiated. Specifically, they found that Ms. Chartrand's conduct amounted to personal harassment in that over a period of time, the manner in which she engaged with you, you being Laura, and the approach used to assign work and manage your performance constituted conduct which was severe, in that such conduct could reasonably cause an individual to be humiliated or intimidated, and was repeated, and had a lasting, harmful effect on you.
Yeah, and if you look a little further down, look at this. Given that Ms. Chartrand is no longer with the college will not be taking any further corrective actions arising from this investigation. She's no longer with the college when this letter came out.
Well, that's sort of strangely worded. It's not surprising that given that the law firm came to the conclusions that they did that she's no longer with them. You can imagine somebody being fired for that. But it doesn't say she was fired. It does say the college will not be taking any further corrective actions. It could be read to mean that they've already taken a corrective action in getting rid of her as arising from this investigation, but not necessarily. It's not clear from this whether or not the college fired her for what she did to Laura or if she quit. Julian, were you able to find out?
Yes, I was. So I just asked the college. They were able to tell me that Rebecca was not fired. She resigned in December of 2019, and they even told me why. They said to pursue new opportunities.
Right. I guess I'm wondering if she was invited to resign.
I don't know.
Okay, Julian, is that the end of the story?
No, it's not the end of the story. So there's actually a little coda to this. And this takes place not in 2019 like the rest of the story, but this year after the most recent federal election. And it happened on Facebook. And we're going to tell you about it after the break.
So, Julian, as you were telling us, there was more to this all. And the most recent events happened after the federal election.
Yeah, so in April 2025, a guy named Kyle Van Rosenhoff, who appears to be a former student of Red River College, makes this post online on Facebook, and I'll let you read it, Jesse.
So here's what Kyle wrote on Facebook. How quickly people forget that she was fired from her job. We now know that he was wrong about that, but that's what he thought. That she was fired from her job, he wrote, for allowing this inappropriate survey to be distributed to Indigenous students. Watching old news clips and her apology is not believable at all. But I'm sure she's a changed person and doesn't have those views on Indigenous people anymore. I'm assuming that he wrote the last couple lines sarcastically and just reminding our listeners that she is Indigenous herself, which doesn't preclude any of the accusations that Kyle's making here. But that's what he wrote on Facebook. So what? I guess, is my question. So this was a student who was, students were upset with her back in 2019. Kyle was upset with her after she won the federal election.
Yep.
Is that the coda?
Yep. Nope, not quite. So Kyle's post goes up. People are sharing it around. But then Rebecca Chartrand decided to respond herself.
Uh-huh.
So she made a post, tagged Kyle.
All right, so here's what she wrote. Kyle Van Rosenhoff, I will not be bullied or let you slander me. I need to make a public statement. Unfortunately, the moment I was elected to serve my community as a member of parliament, the lateral violence began with Kyle. One individual has been circulating slanderous and completely false claims about me. I have made every reasonable attempt to ask him to remove his defamatory content, but he has refused. Let me be clear. This is slander. The statements are untrue, malicious, and harmful. I have issued a formal cease and desist letter and am now actively exploring all available legal remedies, including defamation proceedings. If anyone has information on where this individual works or resides, please reach out privately. An MP should not be posting this.
It's not a good look, eh?
Well, it's more than the look. It's unclear why she is soliciting information about where her online critic resides. I guess it could be so she could like sue the person, but
she said she's already issued a cease and desist. So it's like, what do you need their address for if that's the case?
I don't think we should draw any conclusions about why she was just sort of like putting out this call for like, send me the address, because we don't know what she wanted that address for. But I'm comfortable saying that that seems like a rookie mistake.
I should also note, since we started reporting on the story, Rebecca's Facebook name has changed to Wappanoong Chartrand, which is her traditional name. And that post about Kyle is gone.
So some level of cleaning up the digital tracks here.
Maybe. I mean, maybe it was set to private. I don't know. But I can't access it. It's gone.
It might be accessible if you're Facebook friends with her. We don't know.
Right.
Julian, I know that you reached out to her for comment. I know that you reached out to the Liberal Party of Canada for comment.
Yes.
Did they respond?
They did.
Oh, good. What did they say?
So, from a spokesperson for the Liberal Party nationally, quote, Canadians expect all political parties to do their due diligence on all prospective candidates, and the Liberal Party of Canada has a rigorous process to appropriately conduct such reviews. For reasons of confidentiality, we do not comment on the specifics of individual candidates' applications. I would refer you to her office, copied here in parentheses, directly for any additional questions.
Right. I take from that, if you guys at Canada Land are saying that we missed this stuff about her past, we did not. We vetted her. We knew about this. And we ran her anyhow and made her a minister anyhow. And the rest of your questions, you should just ask her yourself.
So, yeah, here's what we got from Chartrand's chief of staff. Quote, Minister Chartrand is committed to fostering a healthy work environment for all persons in the workplace, characterized by collegiality and mutual respect. Regarding the social media post referenced, Minister Chartrand deeply regrets the language and tone she expressed. She unreservedly offers her apologies for the language of the post.
It's interesting that Kyle gets an apology for this public statement where she kind of crashed out, but there's nothing in there for Laura. But I know enough about how these things work that I just wonder if there's any kind of liability if you were to apologize to your former employee, if you're violating confidentiality, if that might open you up for, you know, legal repercussions.
Right.
I got to know, though, did you ask her specifically, like, what was this stuff about? What's his address? And like, you're threatening to sue people. Did you sue anyone?
Yeah.
You asked her.
Yeah,
question.
We asked all of that stuff.
Didn't answer any of it.
No.
But we would know from public court documents if she had actually filed any kind of defamation proceedings. A lot of people would know that if a minister, an MP, was out there suing somebody for libel and defamation. Can I share like one more reflection on this whole thing?
Yes, please.
Or maybe two. Like, first of all, I.
Yeah, I'm cutting you off at two, but sure.
Here's the first thing that comes to mind. Much like Chartrand's response to the first time things went public through the media, it was unfortunate that it took that it had to be a public embarrassment for her to take responsibility and apologize. The apology was not the greatest apology, but that more or less happened the way you would hope it would, that somebody says, yeah, this is the buck stops here. This shouldn't have happened. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And notwithstanding that there was no apology for Laura, which for reasons I got into earlier, maybe she was not at liberty to make that apology. I feel similarly about the response with Kyle. Like, who among us has not fired off a response to a critic online where we kind of regretted it, we went too far?
I've said some dumb shit, and the only difference is I'm not.